the age of the Emperor. To understand the tragedy of the Horus Heresy, it is first vital to understand what came before it. Both the shifting, tenebrous millennia of strife and the too brief, shining centuries in which the Emperor walked amongst his subjects and dispelled the darkness. Old Earth. 300 centuries ago, mankind first left the polluted, used-up carcass of Old Earth for the unknown bounties and perils beyond the skies of our birth world. In those forgotten early years, it is unknown what enemies and trials humanity overcame in our uncaring universe to not only survive, but thrive and forge a domain amongst the stars. Colonies spread across our galaxy so that humanity was scattered across a million worlds and found treasures and horrors uncounted. Mankind's mastery ascended to an almost unimaginable zenith, and at its heart lay a resurgent Earth. The promised wonders of our species' earliest ambitions were made manifest, and our application and control of the sciences was unparalleled. Humanity reached its pinnacle, raised up by the miracles of technology which it wrought, reshaping uncounted worlds in the vision of distant old Earth. The legends which remain of that lost realm of ancient human empires speak of a galaxy of plenty, filled with opportunity, culture, technological progress, and wonder. The Dark Age of Technology. In the heights of those times, lost to all but supposition and myth, humanity made itself as unto gods, able to harness the power of the stars, and fashion servants from clay and iron, and give them counterfeit life to do their bidding. Unfortunately, this era of advancement was not to last, for humanity fell prey to its own sciences. Mankind's golden age failed, wherein the promised wisdom of science and technology did not elevate mankind to the divine, but rather smote it for the consequences of its reckless excess and ambitions untempered by reason. Martian-Terran wars of terrible destruction ensued, and the beautiful, animate tools which mankind had created and so coveted were corrupted and turned upon all humanity. Horrors were perpetrated to possess meager resources all but depleted from the earlier age of prosperity. And greed and hubris saw fearsome ancient weapons unleashed that risked our species' very annihilation. Such were the terrors of this time, that death could cross vast distances of space, coming unexpected and uninvited to consume entire worlds. This was the Dark Age of Technology, and for millennia it reigned. the age of strife. Mankind's first empire would fall into bloody ruin, isolation, and ignorance. The terrible period of history that followed is officially named the Age of Strife, although it has another name, whispered only fearfully, Old Night. During the darkness of Old Night, humanity experienced naught but nightmare and predation for over 5,000 years. During this time, the worlds of mankind were isolated by searing warp storms that made interstellar travel virtually impossible. And ancient Terra was totally cut off from its colonies and allies. Across the galaxy, human worlds, bereft of central authority or protection, and with the web of support and supply that had maintained the threads of civilization cut, fell into anarchy and war. Human civilization was torn apart as local factions and new empires fought for control in the shattered realms, while others, utterly cut off from aid, succumbed to the horrors of planet-wide famine, insanity, and worse, the perils of the warp. The existence of warp creatures and the dangers they posed to the human mind were then barely understood. On worlds with large concentrations of emergent psychers, the entities from beyond were able to breach the barrier between the immaterium and corporeal reality. And it cannot be known or guessed how many worlds were ravaged or swallowed whole by their incursions. As human civilizations fragmented, hundreds of Xenos races and enemies unknown seized their chance for revenge on humanity for its past conquests or to plunder unprotected worlds and enslave their populations. Hundreds more human-inhabited star systems were sacked and ravaged, their peoples slaughtered, mutilated, or abducted. Those that survived the alien onslaught rapidly reverted to barbarism, stripped of civilization, knowledge, and culture in the raw battle to endure. Humanity stood on the brink of total extinction, and endless night gathered round its children. Alone and beset by internal strife, famine, and plague, under incessant attack by aliens and facing the horrors of warp incursions, the human worlds that survived were pitiable shadows of what they had once been. It was to become an age when mankind's dead far outnumbered its living. Shorn of its galactic empire, ancient Terra could not sustain itself. Protracted internecine wars emptied old Earth's terrible arsenals of radiological weaponry, killing untold billions, destroying its ancient power structures, and boiling off the last of its oceans. In their aftermath, the planet became a lawless battleground, little more than a blasted desert dotted with ruins, its people reduced to the level of brute savages fighting over the scarce water and untainted land which remained. old Earth expired entirely. All of its ancient knowledge lost, and its cities torn down. And where it once stood, instead reigned a world of savagery and horror, the equal of any brought to ruin in the age of strife. Long before left parlous and polluted, generations of war made Terra a wasteland, punctuated by fortified holdfasts built amid the wreckage of lost civilizations, and its inhabitants a mass of degenerate feral nomads. Insane prophets, cyber-augmented butcher kings, vivisector warlords, and religious demagogues led the warring tribes of ancient Earth. And the war was racked by incessant conflict as one tyrant displaced another. Petty empires rose and disintegrated. Tribes formed, were destroyed, and reformed as diminishing, brutalized shadows of lost glories and forgotten triumphs. Uncounted billions died, unknown and unremembered, while whispered names, such as the Unspeakable King and the Seven Neverborn, left legends to terrify generations to come. Anarchy and bloodshed was lord over all. For those few with time enough to spare thought to such matters, it would have seemed as if there were no hope and no help. The end times were at hand, and a slow, bitter descent into destruction was all that any could see as humanity's future. Many succumbed to despair, believing no force imaginable could save mankind and free it from its hellish bondage. But they would be proved wrong. The Unification Wars. From out of this seemingly endless cycle of violence and doom, a leader emerged. A warlord more powerful than any before him. He was the Emperor, and his power lay in his rationality and foresight, and his mastery of science was as unequaled as his might as a warrior, although few suspected the true range of his powers and abilities. The Emperor conquered great swaths of old Earth, and those who would not join him, he destroyed. But his conquest was not merely one born of blood and ambition, but a higher calling. Where his dominion reigned, the idols of fear and blind faith were cast down, and order and rationality were raised up in their place. Under his rulership, humanity would be restored, intellectually, spiritually, and physically, to the heights it had once known, and the shackles of darkness cast aside. It was not enough merely to secure military victory. However, the betterment and restoration of humanity required more. So, it was that even before victory on ancient Terra had been achieved, the Emperor and those learned souls he had gathered to him started to experiment with genetics. This was done first and foremost, to stabilize the population and to recreate the race of mankind as it was before the radiation storms and generations of viral and alchemical weapons had wrecked the planet. Secondly, the creation of genetically augmented superhuman fighters that had begun with the Thunder Warriors continued apace into newer, more powerful creations, ultimately leading to the genesis of what would later become known as the Space Marine Legions. These were the days of the Unification Wars, in which the remaining tyrants of ancient Earth, Caligon of Ursh, Narthan Doom, and others just as bloody-handed, were at last cast down. The Emperor commanded superior armies of genetically enhanced warriors, such as his Thunder Legions, the nascent Legions Astartes, and the Legio Custodes, the Emperor's guardians, who were few in number but peerless in might. The war continued without relent, until finally, all of Old Earth's techno-barbarian factions and fractured city-states pledged the Emperor fealty. And at last, Terra was unified for the first time in many millennia. Alongside this ascendancy would come a rebirth of civilization and government, with the Emperor founding an all-embracing civil administration to reorder and rebuild his world, and concentrate such learning and knowledge that could be salvaged from the dust of ages in houses of learning and education. The unification of Terra would only be the start. The Dawn of Imperium. Understanding that no one mortal, even one such as he, could rule alone, the Emperor founded his War Council, comprised of his most able generals and a number of high-ranking administrators, the most formidable of which was Malkador, known as the Sigilite. Malkador was not a warrior, but a man of learning with the bearing of a priest. His origins, unknown to all save perhaps the Emperor, to whom some said he was kin. Malkador was appointed to run the Emperor's palace and imperial court, and through this manage the administration of newly conquered Terra as his master's left hand. Where Terra had been a place of unending war, it now became a place of unceasing activity, production, and planning. Just as the conquest of Old Earth was complete, a mighty and unforeseen cosmic event occurred. A massive shockwave blasted across the Immaterium, clearing the warp storms that had plunged the galaxy into tumult and raged for millennia. It seemed to some divine providence, fueling the belief of those that considered the Emperor to be himself divine, no matter how much he decried this claim. The way to the galaxy was now open, and the Emperor's armies would now be able to take to the stars, with the other planets of Terra's solar system, the first step upon the road. The Great Crusade had begun. Lords of the Red Planet. For thousands of years, the planet of Mars has been ruled by the strange and mysterious caste of tech priests known as the Mechanicum, or the Cult Mechanicus, who formed a technocratic parliament of feudal overlords. This religious sect rose to dominance on Mars during the early centuries of the Age of Strife. And, through the machine cult, Mars had evolved a strong culture and ordered civilization based around worship of their machine god, or Omnissiah, as it is also known. To the priesthood of Mars, science and technology were matters of sacred mysteries and arcane religion. Matters not only of reason and experiment, but of vital ritual and ceremony. The Mechanicum's sacred duty was to maintain, venerate, and reacquire the techno-arcana of ages past. A creed that had risen on a planet which had been a technological powerhouse in the dark age that had gone before. And given its rad-scoured barrens, where technology had offered the only hope of survival. When the warp storms flared, and mankind began its dreadful period of isolation, Mars had also suffered the same fate as the other worlds of humanity. The Red Planet was sundered from its colonies. The thrall navigators that had been based there, no longer able to chart a safe course through the warp. And Mars itself was lost amid a solar system descending into a civil war of collapsing societies, anarchy, and bloodshed. Mars suffered just as ancient Earth did, and in some measures, worse. Without sufficient food or water to sustain its population, famine and war swiftly followed, worsening as through damage and neglect, planetary radiation shields and macro-industrial plants failed and poisoned the planet further, murdering what fragile artificial ecosystem had been sustained over the millennia. By the time the Mechanicum rose from their bunkers to wrest control from the scattered cannibal, rad-mutated creatures, and half-insane automata, and false minds that haunted the benighted surface, they had evolved from a cult dedicated to survival by the recovery of technology, to a fully fledged techno-mystic faith. Under the control of the Mechanicum's feudal tech priest overlords, order was restored. The rad shields repaired, and great machine temples rose up, turning out materials and machinery, synthetic food and oxygen, and Mars was rebuilt in the image of their inhuman god construct. Deus Ex Mechanicus. Long before the Emperor reunited Terra under his standard, Mars stood as one under the auspices of the Omnissiah. when it looked out across the solar system and sent ships to its spheres, it found nothing but chaos, threat, and savagery. The Martian Magi concentrated their attentions on Old Earth, ancient seat of humanity's power, and looked on it with both hunger and fear. They knew that the world harbored many secrets, and that some of the warring barbarians of ancient Earth would be able to glean these and use them for themselves. Perhaps one day, falling upon Mars in their savagery. So it was that the Tech Priests became bitter foes of the Techno-Barbarian tribes and shifting caste of murderous tyrants that held sway over portions of Old Earth. For centuries, they sought to plunder and steal what technologies they could. But they were also fixated with the fate that had befallen the wider human galaxy. To this end, they periodically dispatched great vessels into the warp in the hope that some clues would be found and to colonize and restore what ancient domains of humanity as could be recovered. These were the first explorator fleets of Mars, and over the centuries, hundreds of such expeditions went out blindly into the dark stars, prey to the tumult in the warp. Some founded new colonies, the sundered worlds that were to become the Forge worlds in time, as they were reunited with their lost kin during the Imperium's expansion. But many were simply lost. When the Emperor unified Terra, the Lords of Mars scrutinized unfolding events with envious eyes, and some among them recognized a kindred spirit. The Emperor was to them a man of science who valued the machine and technological advancement, while others saw only a deadly new power to be feared. As word filtered back to Mars of the Emperor's superhuman achievements, some tech priests even began to equate the Emperor with their own machine god, in fulfillment of ancient prophecies. And debate raged on Mars as to whether to treat the Emperor as savior or enemy. Such facts the Emperor was not ignorant of, for he too had watched the Red Planet from afar and made his plans accordingly. Mindful of the diplomatic opening the Mechanicum's beliefs afforded, and the vast strategic difficulties and destruction to his own forces, any, and by no certain means, attempt to take Mars by force would entail, the Emperor sought a negotiated alliance with the Mechanicum Parliament. In return for supplying material for his armies and building a mighty war fleet for his crusade to the stars, the Emperor promised to protect the Tech Priests and respect the sovereignty of their Forge worlds across the galaxy, affording them a level of independence unequaled within the Imperium. Furthermore, the Emperor gave to the service of the Mechanicum 6 of the houses of the Navigators who replace their long-dead thrall navigators, so that their ships might once again travel safely through the warp. Given such an incentive, Mars assented to an alliance, although not without some bloody internal strife over the matter. The alliance was sealed, and the Mechanicum's ambassador to Terra, the powerful Fabricator General who spoke for the Martian Parliament, was respectfully given a seat on the War Council of the Great Crusade. Access to the giant factories of Mars enabled the Emperor to vastly increase the power of his legions. With improved war gear and supply. And in addition, the tech priests of Mars lent their arts to the construction of the massive warp-capable battleships that could transport the Emperor's legions across the galaxy. And provided the mighty city-crushing war machines, known as Titans, to the ever-expanding Imperial military. The Great Crusade. Where Terra had once been a realm of unending war, it now became a place of unceasing activity, production, and planning. For it was the Emperor's great cause not simply to bring Terra once more to the light of prosperity and order, but to liberate the unimaginably vast and scattered worlds of humanity from the darkness and reunite them into a single Imperium of mankind. The Great Crusade was a mammoth operation on an unconceivable scale and complexity, involving billions of troops and tens of thousands of ships. And only a mind such as the Emperor's could have had a hope of successfully comprehending and executing it. Hundreds of thousands of human worlds needed to be saved, and as many more alien or otherwise hazardous worlds ravaged if the so-called Pax Imperialis, or the Imperial Peace, was to be brought into being across the galaxy. With Mars now a part of the Imperium, the Great Crusade could begin. The solar system was the first region of space to be conquered by the Emperor and his newly rearmed and re-equipped Space Marine legions. Alien invaders were flushed from the moons of Saturn and Jupiter, and their wretched enslaved human inhabitants repatriated to Terra. The once human creatures of the Neptunian deeps were exterminated without mercy. And the baleful false world of Sedna at Sol's edge light was boiled away to vapor under the guns of the newly forged warfleet. The next step was to conquer the stars beyond. In order to manifest this conquest, the Imperium's forces were divided up into an expanding and frequently reconfigured series of expeditionary fleets. Semi-autonomous battle groups assigned to voyage the stars, map the darkness of the void, and make war in the Emperor's name. They were composed in chief of a bewildering array of void ships great and small. From battleships and war cruisers to Mechanicum Arcs, Provender Barks, and colossal troop transports. And countless lesser escorts, dropships, pathfinders, and scouts. The paths of these fleets were dictated both in general by the Emperor and his war council, but also at the will of their commanders, who were entrusted to seek out the enslaved and destroy the alien under their own cognizance. Their passages were dictated by many factors: apocryphal lore left over from the Dark Age vaults as to where the great colonies of old might be found, the prognostications of the tech priests of Mars and the savant scholars of Terra, and the reports of that rare and infamous breed of rogue traders given license to run before the fleets as birds of ill omen before a storm, as well as myth, rumor, and legend. The expanding Space Marine legions were the spearhead of the Imperium's military might, the killing edge against which the strength of a foe was broken, and which toppled empires by ripping out their heart. Alongside them was the Imperial Army, hundreds of regiments of human troops drawn from Terra, and also from conquered worlds, serving in a support capacity and holding ground conquered by the Space Marines. Where the legions were not available, the elite expeditionary arm of the Imperial Army, the Solar Auxilia, stood in their stead. Weight of numbers their chief advantage. Just as vital were the war machines supplied by the Mechanicum and their forge worlds. Foremost amongst these were their legions of battle automata, the mighty Legios Titanica. The Great Crusade was a mission to free humanity from the aliens and warp creatures that had nearly destroyed it. World after world was reconquered and made part of the Imperium. This was called achieving compliance with the Imperial truth, the rational, secular belief of the Imperium. Such integration was reached with diplomacy and the promise of a better future and a wider connection with a galactic human society where possible, and by force of arms where not. Tyrants were broken, the falsities of religion and dogma forbidden, and to humankind mercy was shown where it had not become irrevocably tainted or changed. For the alien, there was no such mercy, and Xenos oppressors were routed or annihilated in a series of epic wars which freed billions of enslaved humans. In every corner of the void, the brute scourge of the alien was found, and everywhere it was confronted and routed. Ancient Xenos empires were met with death and destruction. Lesser species were exterminated without pity or remorse. And those too strange or unnatural to be bested in conventional warfare were instead contained or driven into the outer darkness. The Great Crusade did not shirk from this dire task. Where planets were encountered that had become infected with warp creatures, and the barriers of reality slashed open, those worlds were cleansed with powerful virus bombs and vortex missiles in apocalyptic orbital barrages designed to slay the living and seal the breach. This act of sanction, known as Exterminatus, was never undertaken lightly. During the Great Crusade, the Primarchs, the Emperor's gene-forged sons that were scattered by an unknown cataclysm at their birth, were reunited with their gene father. These the Emperor set to his cause, granting each a legion to command, and using the planets on which the Primarchs had been raised as their legion's home. These worlds were heavily fortified and developed, and the Primarchs were given fiefdom over them. The Legion homeworlds, along with a handful of other strategically vital planets, such as staging posts and fortress worlds, became linchpins of the Great Crusade as it moved further from Terra and direct central command and coordination became ever more difficult. Furthermore, the logistical task of supplying the Great Crusade fleets would have been impossible without the great reforging of the Mechanicum, by which Martian power brought back into the fold its sundered forge worlds and colonies that were scattered the breadth of the galaxy during the Age of Strife. Each of these forge worlds created more void ships and arms, and accelerated the pace of the Great Crusade until its outer expanse was almost autonomous of Terra, carrying it to the verges of the galaxy and beyond. The War Council was the ruling body of the Imperium during the Great Crusade, and through it, the Emperor's Law was brought to hundreds of thousands of human worlds. The Emperor sat at the head of the Council. At his left hand was Malkador, and with them were the greatest of his Unification Wars generals and accomplished administrators from the ruling dynasties of Terra and the Sol System. When the Emperor made his alliance with Mars, the Fabricator General of the Mechanicum was also granted a seat. Supporting the Council was a clade of astropaths who provided communication between the members, since it became increasingly impractical for the group to physically assemble given the size of the growing Imperium and the inherent difficulties of travel through the warp. Conquered worlds were given new governors. Many were Imperial commanders rewarded for their service by being given a planet to rule the Emperor's name, while others were the indigenous rulers of worlds who had bent the knee to the Emperor and had been rewarded for their wisdom. Imperial governors were masters of their worlds, but operated within clearly defined strictures of Imperial law, and possessed important responsibilities. First of all, they were to uphold the imperial truth, and second, to provide tithe to the wider Imperium by way of supplying troops and resources as called upon, as well as provide shelter and succor to the Emperor's armies and fleets. Importantly, it was their responsibility to cleanse their population of grievous mutation, and specifically, Psykers. Each was told to expect great black ships to visit their worlds and carry Psykers away to Terra. And these ships were not to be denied upon pain of planetary extinction. This great endeavor was called the Imperial Tithe. As the Great Crusade progressed, joined to the War Council, if not granted the elevation of joining it, were an inevitably widening vortex of admirals and commanders, generals, sector governors, and ministers of state. Below these were advocates and technocrats, responsible for control of far-flung administrative systems and world regimes with chains of supply and distribution whose scale beggared belief. Each of the Primarchs was given a seat on the War Council, as was the chief of the Legio Custodes, Constantin Valdor. But such men were creatures of war, not politics, and largely remained aloof from matters of governance that did not serve the prosecution of the Great Crusade. As the years became decades, some of the baseline human council members died in war, or through simple old age or infirmity, and were replaced only irregularly. So it was that increasingly beyond the ultimate authority of the Emperor himself, Malkador the Sigillite, the unnaturally long-lived and razor-minded Imperial Regent, proved the only individual capable of managing the minutiae of this vast Imperium, becoming over time both overseer of the Imperial Tithe and overall chief of the Imperial Administration. At the end of nearly two centuries of war, the Primarchs were all united with their legions, and millions of human worlds had been restored to the fold. The alien had been smashed and driven to the edges of the galactic fringes, or contained within dead voids, devoid of human colonization, to be slowly annihilated at the Emperor's pleasure. The power of the Imperium was at its zenith, and the Great Crusade was reaching its conclusion. There appeared to be no one and nothing remaining that could threaten the fruition of the Emperor's grand design. After a series of glorious victories that marked the culmination of the Imperium's expansion, the Emperor decided it was time for him to withdraw from the Great Crusade and return to Terra, to set in motion the next stage of his great plan to save humanity. He had every confidence in his sons, the Primarchs, to prosecute the Great Crusade to its end. the Primarchs and their legions had proved themselves time and again. And soon the galaxy would be utterly cleansed of the alien and other threats to the worlds of mankind. At a great triumph on Olinor, once the center of the last great Xenos Empire to threaten the Segmentum Solar, the Emperor bestowed upon the Primarch Horus the title of Warmaster, and ceded to him control of all the Imperium's military forces in the Emperor's stead. The other Primarchs were then instructed to follow Horus and obey him to finish their mission. There was disquiet amongst the Primarchs. Several were dismayed that the Emperor would no longer be fighting at their side, and some even whispered that they had been set aside like tools whose usefulness was at an end. However, the Emperor was adamant in his decision. Departing, the Emperor returned to Terra and his great palace, and began his greatest work under a veil of secrecy. He drew to him certain advisors and retired to the private vaults of his city fortress. Horus, meanwhile, set about his new duties with relish. He immediately dispatched messengers to the other Primarchs in order to make plans for the resolution of the Great Crusade with almost feverish haste, knowing that while some would welcome his new rank and authority, others would be at best indifferent and at worst resentful of them. Horus spoke to each Primarch in turn, both in private and in public, before an assembly of the legions, and Horus the Warmaster promised them victory. He promised them that he would never fail in his command and never leave them leaderless while breath remained in his body.